Shell Game. Philadelphia, Timeline 2, August 2020. Rita jaunted back into the real world, as she still thought of it, at 4:07 in the morning. By 4:40, she'd been through a decontamination shower, a medical check, 3 blood samples, and a humiliatingly random piss test. Apparently someone was worried she'd spent her hour in the Black Rain timeline cranking up on crystal meth. The war on drugs might have ended in an armistice, but government employment regulations took a dim view of using recreational pharmaceuticals on the job. So when Patrick materialized and shoved a steaming mug of Starbucks into her hand, it came as a blessed relief, until he shook his head.
"Save it for the debriefing committees," he murmured.
"Committees plural?"
"Yep."
"Oh, hell. Sorry." They let her take off her body armor and extract herself from the rat's nest of biomonitor electrodes before they sat her down and grilled her for 8 hours. Her interrogators took shifts in strict rotation. Patrick and the colonel first and fastest, then 2 teams of suits from Maryland, one to perform due diligence and oversight on the unit's reportage, and the other to perform due diligence on the due diligence checkers. Patrick and the colonel wanted her to walk them through her telemetry feed and provide commentary, giving them insights into why she'd done particular things. Suit Team 1 wanted to walk her through their checklist instead, and Suit Team 2 seemed to want her to walk them through Suit Team 1's checklist, while demonstrating all the flexibility of a gang of incredibly advanced animatronic department store mannequins. Back in college, old Professor Hanshaw had explained the second artist effect to her class. The first artist paints the landscape they see with their own eyes. The second artist paints what they see in the first artist's exhibition. They can't show you a true representation because they never saw the real thing in the first place. This, Rita was beginning to feel, was as true for intelligence operations as for any other art form. And so she spent a weary morning and early afternoon regurgitating endlessly chewed over morsels of data for the 3rd and 4th string hacks to squabble over. The worst part of it all was that they mostly seemed to be intent on undermining each other or the unit's reporting by digging dirt. She half expected one of the men in gray to stand up suddenly, point an emotional accusatory claw at her, and denounce her as a double agent in the pay of Moscow Central. Or perhaps they were hoping to accuse her of summoning imps to sour milk, or of not complying with federal standards for hand sanitizer application during her restroom breaks. If only they knew, she told herself hopelessly, cleaving to the memory of the smell of the nape of Angie's neck in the early hours, as if it was an anchor cable to reality. At 2:00 PM, Colonel Smith broke in to rescue her. He'd enlisted reinforcements. Dr. Scranton trailed behind, her poker face frozen, like a thin rind of ice covering a lake of viciously dry amusement, as she sent the brigade of second-guessers scattering like tenpins.
"Ah, Miss Douglas," she nodded to Rita.
"Ladies and gentlemen," she glanced at the suits from Maryland, "you've had your fun. Miss Douglas, if you'd come with me, please." She turned and stalked away without waiting. The colonel hung back and ran interference, while Rita apologized to the swarm of third-tier interrogators and hot-footed it after the doctor.
"Sorry about that," Scranton said offhandedly, then paused for Colonel Smith to catch up.
"You were right, Eric."
"Right?"
Rita echoed.
"You were being nibbled to death by..."
Smith mopped his brow with a tissue.
"What are those fish they use for pedicures? Doctor fish?"
"Diffusion of responsibility meets infighting," said Scranton.
"Well, we left you in the pedicure pool for 8 hours until you were nice and wrinkled. They can't complain about being denied access."
"This is a rescue?"
Rita yawned,
too enervated to raise a hand and cover her mouth. First you came to the attention of important people, then you delivered an unexpected result. Scranton shrugged. Her elegant suit jacket's shoulders rose, as if padded with Kevlar. Chanel couture for a DC bureaucratic quarterback. They were bound to go apeshit, looking for anything they can use as leverage. Do you think they found anything, Eric? The colonel looked, if not haggard, then perhaps somewhat stale. He, too, must have been on the go since yesterday evening, Rita realized.
Not really. But that won't stop them trying to mix it. We'll just have to outrun them, he said. My office, please. We should keep this quiet.
What's this about? Rita asked, trudging after him as he led the way to the elevators.
Phase 2.
The colonel's temporary office was a business suite on the top floor of the hotel building. An open door led to a bedroom. The main room was dominated by a conference table, a sofa suite, and a kitchenette, where a coffee filter machine burbled welcomingly. Rita sank into a recliner and tried not to let her eyes close prematurely. Dr. Scranton took the sofa to her left and spoke. We're going to have to get rid of the leeches before they suck us dry.
I don't really understand, Rita complained.
The colonel placed a mug of coffee on the occasional table in front of her.
You're not supposed to. Do you want to bring her up to speed, boss? Or shall I?
Huh. Allow me.
Dr. Scranton waited while he fetched her a coffee. What kind of person has the equivalent of a major general doing the fetching and carrying anyway? Rita wondered.
We live and work in a panopticon, Rita. Everything you do, every breath you take, someone's watching over you. It's the price of doing business in a security state. The trouble is you can be running a nice tight ship, and if it suddenly starts delivering results, well, all those eyeballs turn inward. And their owners all start trying to figure an angle that'll let them take the credit for a job well done.
But you're... Rita struggled to sit upright.
You're a deputy undersecretary of state, she wanted to shout. What are you even doing here?
Why are you getting involved? Isn't this below your level?
Eric petitioned me to help with leech detachment duty. You've waded into a swamp full of bloodsuckers and you can't reasonably do your job if you're carrying passengers. But nobody likes a rogue operation. So this week we're making sure that all the would-be stakeholders get a good look at the unit, up close and personal. Then after they've had a look inside, I'm going to slam the door in their face so that Eric can lock it down and get everything back on course.
She slid an etiolated, almost skeletal hand into her handbag and extracted a white cylinder, raised it to her lips, and sucked, hard. A blue LED glowed at its tip. The stakes are escalating. Too high for this penny-ante house politics bullshit. My boss, he says his boss is counting on you. And the buck stops on her desk, in the Oval Office. Rita watched, eyes glazed, as Dr. Scranton exhaled a stream of bone-white smoke. The undersecretary leaned back, then addressed Colonel Smith. The Corps need-to-know cell is going to be restricted as tightly as possible, minimum threat surface. You will nominate a team of no more than 4 bodies to generate internal disinformation under top-secret classification. They will manufacture falsified mission transcripts and reports from Rita to support the appearance that operations in Black Rain are proceeding nominally. Transcripts to be seeded with randomized tells in each distribution so that your people can trace leakers. If any leaks are identified, those responsible will be either turned, if there's an organization behind them and they are cooperative, or detained incommunicado. Rita noticed Smith's brief expression of unease. Is that some sort of euphemism? She wondered. The disinform reports may include elements of legitimate intel if and only if we have no reason to redact it. The best lies are parsimonious. In other words, as far as the peanut gallery is concerned, Jaunt Blue deployment and orientation in Black Rain will continue as planned.
In reality, we anticipate that Rita's tasking will increasingly diverge from the Black Rain roadmap over time. The Undersecretary turned her unblinking gaze on Rita.
What do you understand from all this?
Rita's lips were suddenly dry.
Jesus.
She tried to gather her scattered thoughts.
You're exposing the operation internally so that you can use it as cover for a deeper operation? In the Black Rain timeline?
Dr. Scranton nodded slowly. Her face, no longer poker still, was nevertheless serious.
They've got nukes, Rita. They're at least late 1960s in technology terms. They've got computers and tanks and the proven ability to detect and shoot down stealthed drones. In some ways, they're ahead of us. They've got containerized multimodal transport. And they've also got electrified freight and high-speed trains. If you were in the White House, what would you be thinking?
I'd be thinking, oh God, we're fucked. If they have world walkers, we are so fucked.
It's a good thing they don't have world walkers, isn't it?
Scranton nodded. Then she reached into her handbag and pulled out a tablet.
Watch this, she said, toneless as an executioner, as she handed the device to Rita.
Watch.
Grainy CCTV video showed a sidewalk on a quiet city street. A middle-aged woman, her black hair scraped back, walked into a questionable-looking establishment, half diner, half bodega. Cut to. Red brick buildings, shuttered windows, locked doors. A man dressed in last year's hipster uncool with heavy-rimmed spectacles and urban sidewalk warrior hybrid bicycle accessory stepped out of a door.
Brooklyn. Back in late March this year, said Scranton. 5 months ago.
Under Eve cameras chased the cycle hipster up an alleyway, along a street, up another alley, and into a wider avenue. Eventually he chained up his bike, shouldered his messenger bag, and approached the same diner as the woman.
Everyone knows about face recognition algorithms, remarked Scranton. They think wearing hoodies will conceal them. Somewhat fewer people know about ear recognition, but it's a big deal. Ears are nearly as unique as fingerprints. And then there's gait recognition. You can't easily change the length of the bones in your legs, so we've got software that can identify people by the way they walk. You'll know it's gone viral when you start seeing news footage of bank robbers in veils and hoopskirts. And of course everyone knows their fat phone camera can recognize cats.
What most people don't know yet is that we've got arbitrary package recognition, said the colonel.
He sounded amused.
Bag recognition software. Mulberry, Ted Baker, Hot Tuna. Or in this case, Crumpler. 20-liter capacity. The bag goes in thin, it comes out fat.
Look at the woman, Rita, said Dr. Scranton.
Something in her tone made Rita tense up, like fingernails on glass.
Look at her.
Rita froze the CCTV stream, backed up, and pinch-zoomed on the woman as she entered the diner, blowing her up until the image pixelated.
That woman, said Dr. Scranton, is a former co-worker of your birth mother, Miriam Beckstein. Her messenger bag, when she entered, was bulging. When she leaves, it's considerably lighter.
The man, a bony finger stabbed at the screen.
We don't know who he is. The transit police lost him in Brooklyn. We dumpster-dived the trash after they both left. He's not on the national DNA database, but we sequenced DNA traces off his meal tray, and they tested positive for the modified glutamate receptor required for Jaunt Blue. Then we did a full workup. He's your third cousin twice removed, Miss Douglas.
Rita froze, chewing her lower lip. She felt oddly unaffected.
So he's a world walker from the clan, and she's a covert asset.
She paused.
Why haven't you lifted them?
Because reasons.
Dr. Scranton stood
clutching her coffee mug, and began to pace jerkily, her power heels digging notches in the deep pile carpet. Like I said, we nearly lifted him on the New York subway. The more pressing question is Ms. Milan, that woman. The FBI investigated her shortly after 7:16. They concluded she was harmless. A first-degree contact, not an associate. It now appears that they were wrong and she was a sleeper. Now she's awake and she's supplying one of their couriers with... You don't need to know. Anyway, he hasn't shown up since that meeting. We're now monitoring her activities, and the next time the clan make contact, we'll snatch them both. But the core takeaway we want you to be aware of is that enemy world walkers are currently active in the United States, keeping a very low profile, but conducting industrial espionage. And Black Rain is one jaunt away from the clan's old stomping ground. Now do you understand why we're briefing you on this? You're afraid the Black Rain people have world walkers, and tanks and computers and nuclear weapons.
Yes. And we know practically fuck all about them.
Except that what we do know is enough to have the president climbing the walls. Well, she's not, but only because she's got liquid helium for blood. She is pushing for results, Rita, so we need to move to phase 2 and phase 3 fast to get safe houses established so we can install armband transporters and send regular clandestine specialists through to establish a presence. But the real problem is that we urgently need to confirm whether or not Black Rain have World Walkers. World Walkers would make Black Rain a deadly strategic threat to us, and especially if they're clan revenants. Or, worst of all, if they're in contact with the Forerunners. Meanwhile, we've got to proceed on the assumption that the clan are still preying on us, that they've penetrated our security perimeter, and that if this operation leaks, they'll be in a position to make us pay, which is why I'm imposing the lockdown. I have a presidential letter authorizing me to set up an inner cell within the unit, within the Department of Homeland Security's Office of Special Programs, and I am authorized to lie to everyone outside the cell, up to and including the National Security Council, Congress, and the Supremes, if necessary. This is a matter of national survival, Rita. And that's why, sooner or later, on one of your missions into Black Rain, not this one, but once you've got the lie of the land and established a safe location for clandestine ops with armband units to transfer, and once we have some idea of the political situation, we are going to lose you. Because we need to open a back channel for negotiations.
Philadelphia, Timeline 2, August 2020. After clocking off until the next day, Rita set her alarm for a 3-hour afternoon nap. She woke, showered, and checked her Facebook friends page. As promised, Angie had changed her relationship status from single to in a relationship. She swallowed, heart pounding. With a tremulous feeling she couldn't identify, somewhere between exultation and doom, she tapped on her profile, watched the page flicker as it reloaded. With a sense of reckless abandon, she changed her status and tagged Angie as her partner. It gave her a shivery sensation in the pit of her stomach. She hadn't gotten around to doing this with Kate. She'd sheltered in the ambiguity of her own emotional shadows, unsure about her own identity, and the uncertainty had eaten away at Kate's trust, until, in the end, it proved insufficient unto the day. To Rita's generation, tagging a partner on FB was as public a display of commitment as wearing an engagement ring had been to her parents. Minus the size of the stone, of course. Checkboxes came in a single size, enforcing a social uniformity that left no room for carrot-denominated ego preening. So she was tiredly unsurprised when her wall exploded with distant, tinny congratulations. And then 10 minutes later, her phone rang.
"Are you working, love?"
She swallowed.
The monosyllable still stunned her with its implications. I'm free tonight. But they want me tomorrow. I'm on day shift for a while.
Great! I'll be right over.
Head still foggy from a disrupted sleep cycle, but fundamentally, anomalously, almost distressingly happy, Rita barely noticed what she was doing as she packed her suitcase. The checkbox on her soul was slower to respond than the one on her Facebook profile, but it felt as if everything in her life was slowly rearranging around it. The idea of spending another night in this characterless concrete commuter cage filled her with revulsion. Then the hotel phone rang.
Hello? Ms. Douglas? Front desk here. Is it Ms. Hagen to see you?
Rita started. Send her up? A minute later, the doorbell rang. She walked to the door, leaving her half-packed suitcase behind.
Hey, room service sent me an angel.
Surprise! It was her Rust Belt girl. She opened the door and Angie stepped inside. She opened her arms to accept her checkbox's reward and found herself an hour later lying in a twisted wreckage of hotel bedding and discarded clothes.
Hey, you fell on your feet, girl. This is some nice shit they're putting you up in.
I was hoping to spend the night at your place instead. Rita rested her head inside the protective curve of Angie's arm. If you can cope with a roomie, I mean. I'm getting to hate hotels. I've been living out of a suitcase for the past year.
I didn't know you were homeless.
Angie sounded amused. No, I'm not homeless. Well, not exactly. Her shared lease with Alice on the apartment outside Cambridge had expired while she was in Camp Graceland, and Alice had found a new flatmate. The unit had kindly cleared Rita's possessions out and stashed her stuff in storage. Meanwhile, her modest pay was stacking up in her account faster than she could spend it.
I've got a job. They just keep sending me places so fast I've lost my center.
No, you haven't. Angie ran a fingertip down her spine, pausing at her coccyx and spreading a palm across her right buttock. Rita shivered.
You just temporarily misplaced it.
The sky beyond the floor-to-ceiling blinds was dark.
I wasn't expecting this, Rita. You're moving fast.
Rita had looked at Angie's timeline that afternoon. She'd checked a long way back. Ever got the feeling there was a hole in your life that suddenly got filled in?
All the time, baby, all the time.
Angie sat up, leaned over, rummaged in her shapeless messenger bag, and pulled out a fancy e-cig. Chrome, or was that really silver? Gear wheels, implausibly meshed into immobility, cradled a transparent oil-filled chamber. She took a hit, leaned back against the headboard, blew white vapor back through her nostrils.
Why didn't I notice you earlier?
I was busy working. You were busy working. We lived too far apart. Rita shrugged. All the old excuses for drifting out of touch. She pushed herself up, sat cross-legged, and glanced around the room.
It's not like I even had the time and energy for speed dating.
Angie leaned against her and draped an arm around her shoulder.
Are you hungry? She asked. We could hit room service, but there's a diner I know.
I'm starving. Why don't we go there?
Yeah, let's do that.
They dressed, exchanging shy glances of complicity. Rita gathered her handbag, wrapping a sock around her fat phone for privacy before she tucked it away. Angie handed her a hotel notepad and pencil. That went in, too. She hip-bumped Rita as she slid her room card key out of the light switch by the door.
I love you so much, Angie murmured.
Not holding hands or sliding arms around waists and kissing as they made their way to the elevator felt like a denial of self. But hotels were public spaces. The outraged were everywhere, disguised as ordinary people, but ready to show fangs and claws in an instant, like so many werewolves of homophobia, if their prejudices were affronted.
The culture wars had been in overdrive for a decade now, energized by the dreadful unknowns that had tumbled the entire nation into post-traumatic stress disorder nearly 18 years ago. Civil partnerships were legal in some states, their relationship unremarkable among friends and family. But random public spaces were another matter, the risk of queer bashing far from negligible. And that was in those states that weren't actively trying to turn the clock back to the 17th century. And so they stood just a few freezing inches too far apart until they reached the darkness of the parking lot doorway, whereupon Angie took Rita's hand to lead her to the pickup. "You've been parked a while," Rita thought for a moment. "If you want privacy, you should know they've got me on a very short leash. I know they bugged my phone. I wouldn't put it past them to have bugged your truck, too."
"Then we'll give them something to remember."
Angie hugged her. "I'll drive manually." Then they climbed into the chilly truck cab. Philadelphia, Timeline 2, August 2020. They ate at a pizza joint and spoke somewhat disjointedly of inconsequentialities, of mutual unfriends, of distant contacts, of hobbies and horses and hopes for the future. Rita caught Angie looking at her from time to time with the stunned gratitude of a lottery winner whose dream ticket had implausibly come true. It gave her a shocked frisson of delight and tenderness to realize that she could have that effect on her. She couldn't help seeing Angie as she'd been when they first met, over a decade ago, even though they were both grown up now, debauched by time, and feeling the infinite weight of their mid-twenties adulthood upon them.
"Do you want to move out of that hotel? You're welcome to stay with me as long as you're in town, if this is just a few weeks. If it's longer, though, we might need to get somewhere bigger."
Angie carved a slice of pizza, slurped its dripping tip into her mouth, and masticated as she continued, "And with more of an eye to privacy, if you follow me."
"I don't know how long I'm here," Rita told her, eyes disquietingly clear, concealing her mouth with a cup of Coke. "I don't really know what they want me for. Probably nothing good. But nothing good beats something bad, doesn't it?"
"Guess so. Let's take a walk?"
Leaving the remains of their food, Rita and Angie strolled around the food court and then out into the mall. It was safe enough to hold hands here, so they did, using finger squeezes for punctuation whenever the conversation took a turn toward more sensitive subjects.
"So you got a job working for the DHS?
Rita nodded.
"Yes, I sure did."
"OMG. Bet that makes you popular at parties."
Rita shrugged.
"Yes. I can live with it. Before it happened, I was looking for a job. At least this way I'm inside the tent."
"But your parents, they're in Arizona. I haven't told them much. They might be okay with it, but I can't tell what the neighbors could think. Border Patrol's part of DHS, too. They think people like us hate America because freedom," Angie said, finger waggling air quotes.
"Who the fuck knows?"
Rita spared her a black-eyed look.
"But they tell all cops it's a bad idea to let the neighbors know what you do, just in case word gets around to the wrong ears."
"Well, no shit,"
Angie thought for a moment.
"Bet your employer has a handle on you."
"Yeah."
"Can you talk about it?"
"It's complicated."
"Say, isn't that the exit?"
Contrary to TV and movie mythology, bugging people who move around a lot is difficult, unless they're carrying microphones with them and speaking clearly. As Angie and Rita left the air-conditioned confines of the mall, their phones were swaddled in socks and hidden inside handbag and backpack. Once out of view of the mall's own security cameras and mics, and well away from bugged rooms and vehicles, they could finally speak openly to each other. Rita explained the context of her adoption, the kidnapping incident, Kurt's suspicions, finally the world-walking elephant in the room.
There might be factions within the clan, but they ignored me for my entire life, so my money's on a stupid-ass attempt by the Colonel's people to gaslight me. All I know is I've got this crazy ability and...
You don't know anything for sure.
Angie squeezed her hand tightly. Rita saw fear and anger reflected in her eyes.
Fucking assholes get their ideas from the movies like everyone else.
Maybe it was your employers. Maybe they thought you weren't patriotic enough, didn't have that old-time, new-time, paratime religion. Maybe they wanted to put some iron in your belly. But it could have been the adversary.
I'm pretty sure it was the Office of Special Programs, said Rita. The Colonel's bosses are kind of desperate.
Her eyes glanced sidelong into another space, as if reviewing something she'd seen.
Whatever. You know what I think? I think you should ask your grandpappy for backup. He knew your birth mother's ma. He's protective.
Don't say that. Rita's eyes grew wide.
If I drag him in, where will it all end?
Who better?
Angie tugged her closer. Your watchers aren't going to take him seriously as a threat. Old guy puttering around on a walking stick, chatting to his old guy buddies. Give him something to do in his retirement.
Angel, they did a deep background check on me. They've got to know about him. My entire family are at risk if...
Rita's breath caught.
You're at risk.
So? That's my choice to make, girl.
Angie shrugged, but Rita saw the tension around her eyes. What would she do if she woke up one morning and found spooks pressuring her? Just by wanting Angie in her life, she'd put her in danger, added her to some kind of watch list for significant others, made her a target for some love-int operation. Any creepy stalker with a security clearance could get at Angie now. But before she could say this, Angie went off on a tangent.
Say, you didn't run a deep background check on me, did you?
Rita shook her head.
I don't have that kind of access. They want me for a sparkly, clandestine asset.
CAs get security cleared, but we don't get to see anything. We live in a velvet-lined box, so we can't give anything away if we're captured. Maybe if I get burned and have to retire to an analysis desk, they'll give me the keys to the kingdom. But for now, all I've got on you is whatever you put on Facebook.
Oh, well, that's okay, then. Because back in the day, I'd have been through your profile like a ferret on crack.
Angie smiled.
That was then, and today I'm just another vet.
Listen, I'd like to write Kurt a letter, for old time's sake. I'll hold back if you don't want me to, but...
I shouldn't.
Rita stared at her.
Oh, what the hell. You'll do it if you feel like it anyway, huh?
Her cheek quirked. I'm not going to say don't. I don't want you to feel like you need to lie to me.
Rita's eyes lost some of their sparkle.
But please don't take any risks on my behalf. It's not worth it. And for fuck's sake, please don't let Gramps go all James Bond on me.
Too late. I'm already taking a risk on you. And your grandpa will do whatever he wants.
Where did I leave the truck?
I want you to come stay with me. Shouldn't I know what I'm inviting into my home?
Angie drove Rita back to her place. Rita kept noticing her stealing furtive glances and shivered. Is it worth it? She wondered, then realized she couldn't imagine life in any other way. A horribly, gratifyingly unexpected change to undergo in less than a week.
Then what should I do next?
There was no obvious answer. The next morning, after dropping Rita off back at the hotel, where her employers wanted to keep her under their thumb, Angie stopped off at a big box Staples and bought a couple of notepads and pencils and a packet of envelopes. Then, over her lunch break, she began to laboriously draft a letter to Ree's grandpappy, Kurt. Once she got home, she retreated under the comforter with a dog-eared copy of a paperback her parents had taught her how to use long ago, and the draft of the letter. She was very rusty. It took her a long time to transcribe it using a prearranged page in the book as the key to a one-time pad. But that was okay. Cipher skills came back once you started using them again, and she had a feeling that after Kurt wrote back with his instructions, she'd be getting all the practice she needed.
Philadelphia, Timeline 2, August, 2020. Evening, morning, a new day, a new headache.
Walk with me, said the colonel.
Rita noticed the missing please. Attendance was mandatory. Smith led her into the open-plan area of the light industrial unit, past a temporary cubicle farm for the non-classified workers, past the makeup, wardrobe, and props departments. They ended up at the door to the Faraday-shielded office trailer that served as a classified site office. Inside, the colonel's own mobile office was barely big enough to hold two chairs and a folding desk.
We have a problem, Smith told her.
Rita tensed. What kind? He said we, she reminded herself. She clung to the choice of pronoun as she waited for him to continue. Smith frowned at her, the rictus slowly deepening into a grimace of anger or frustration. His mood finally snapped like an overstretched rubber band.
Fucking morons!
He slumped into the chair behind his desk.
Sit down, Rita. I am,
he raised his hands.
So sorry, I have to tell you this.
What? She sat, bewildered. She'd been nerving herself for a grilling about Angie for the past 72 hours. Things weren't as bad as they were during the crazy naughties, but there were still plenty of crazies willing to throw the Defense of Marriage Act in your face if you stood up to be counted. Pro-marriage activists had moved on to trying to get the federal ban on sodomy laws revoked, now that they'd rolled back Roe v. Wade.
Is it about my, friend?
Smith put her mind at ease.
Your new girlfriend isn't an issue.
He waved a hand dismissively.
She held a top-secret clearance back in the day. That ticks most of the boxes on the form. No, it's what Eileen was worrying about the day before yesterday. Too many chefs spoil the broth. And right now we've got 16 different chiefs trying to run the kitchen. They can't even agree on whether it's sushi or McDonald's.
He pointed at the tablet on his desk stand.
O'Neill and Gomez had your third mission profile mapped out pretty much as I wanted it, and we were ready to run you through it today. Then the shit hit the fan. From the Homeland Security Council, no less.
Smith's frown turned thunderous, as if he were contemplating the wreckage of his midlife crisis sports car, crumpled under the front fender of an uninsured pickup truck.
They've given me a priority one tasking to look at the state of geological and paleontological research and confirm that black rain was created in the year of our Lord 4004 BC, just like our own timeline.
Huh?
That's not all.
Smith looked grim.
Additionally, you're supposed to find evidence that black rain has been visited by the Greys from Zeta Reticuli, and look for, flying saucer secrets. Someone else wants to know if the locals have located the golden plates of Moroni. Then there's a request for information on the state of anthropogenic climate change in Black Rain, and that one actually makes sense. Except it contradicts Executive Order 4603 banning use of federal funds for research into... You get the picture.
Rita closed her mouth.
What is this stuff?
She asked plaintively. Smith rubbed his eyes and sighed.
It's open season or silly season or both. We've unintentionally created a honeypot for excitable whack jobs of every creed, and they're trying to piss all over the mission requirements with their own agendas.
He tapped his tablet again.
Case in point. There's a priority one tasking to locate the site of the Martian implant control station in upstate New York.
Rita closed her mouth. She opened it and closed it again, speechless.
You get the picture. We're in danger of turning into the ball in a psycho-ceramic football tournament.
He looked at her pensively.
You're sure you're not deeply religious, Rita? No terribly deep convictions about anything?
I was raised Lutheran, kinda sorta.
Well, that's something. At least you're not going to turn missionary on me.
His smile was disturbingly weak.
She shrugged.
Is that sort of thing common?
More than you might think. More than one idiot used discretionary funds to pay for their church outreach program under the guise of running a string of informers. Smith shook his head. This game attracts kooks. Before my time, we used to have a real problem with swivel-eyed witch-finders pointing and shrieking, "Communist!" back when there was a Cold War to run. Then we went through the Great Muslim Panic, and look how well that turned out. Now we've got a multiverse to police and no clear idea what's going on out there. So people with a clear idea of what they want yell the loudest and set policy. And we end up with terms of reference that are total bullshit.
Smith raised a hand, took two deep gulps of air, deflated visibly, and gave a quietly unhappy chuckle.
You didn't hear this, Rita. You didn't see me lose my shit. Understood?
She nodded.
I think you need to know about the shitstorm upstairs, even though Eileen and I are going to do our best to keep you sheltered under our umbrella. In case of emergency, if I'm incapacitated and you can't contact anyone else, I'm going to send you a number in Baltimore that will put you through to Dr. Scranton or her boss. You get to use it once, no questions asked. And if someone is making trouble for you, the White House will make them go away. But you only ever use it if you can't reach me. For the time being, he shrugged. The overt mission and the covert mission are still in alignment, kinda sorta, as you young folks say. I've made you aware of the priorities of our lords and masters, so I can check that off my list. Now, back to work.
He spun his tablet round so she could see it.
We punched another couple of micro-drones through, too small and too low to light up their air defense radar. There's a city where Philadelphia is in this world, as you'd expect. It's smaller and denser, with more high-rise buildings and less suburban sprawl, but it's there. We've located a passenger railway station, too. These folks are big on public transport and streetcars, less so on automobiles. So we're going to put you through a quarter hour before dawn, and you're going to hang out and people watch for a couple of hours. You'll be carrying a military inertial nav system. It works like a handheld GPS map, except it's entirely self-contained, and we filled it with lots of waypoints for safe jaunt sites. If there's any trouble, you just run away. How long you stay there is up to you. It's entirely up to your comfort zone. Except the mapper only has a 7-day fuel cell charge, and we'd rather you came back the same day.
Wait, but what am I going to do for clothes? Money. Rita stared at him. How will I fit in?
Smith shook his head. We don't know. That's why you're going walkabout. I suggest you study what people are wearing, how they talk, what they do. Wardrobe has run up an outfit based on what you videoed at the railhead. It should pass at a distance. If begging is legal, you could try and get us some cash to copy. Go window shopping. See what things cost. Building a retail price index will tell us a lot about their economy, which in turn tells us a lot about the constraints imposed on their military by the funding envelope. If you get a chance to talk to people, take it. Within reason. We don't want you running risks. Finally, back in 2003, we got a memo from the Office of Legal Counsel. The Attorney General approves the legal theory that people in other timelines are not subject to the protections and laws of the USA, even if they're in the equivalent geographical territory. We're not giving you a gun, because if you find yourself in a situation where you might need to defend yourself, you should jaunt immediately. But anything you do over there falls outside the scope of our laws over here, if you follow my drift. You have total immunity.
Got it. Tomorrow morning, quarter before dawn. That's about 6:15, isn't it? Walk around for a few hours. Not less than 2 unless I'm in danger, not more than a day or you start getting edgy. See the sights, play penniless tourist. Anything else?
Yes.
Smith nodded.
You're going to spend the rest of today in a wardrobe fitting, then with props. They'll orient you on the inertial map system. In particular, we want you, if you get a chance, to log waypoints over there for a couple of different types of sites. Abandoned houses or retail establishments in particular. Government offices, too. Then you're sleeping here tonight, I'm afraid. 4:30 wake-up call for makeup. He rose. Good luck, and Godspeed.